Russian novelist Leo Tolstoy, who wrote War and Peace, once said, "The changes in our life must come from the impossibility to live otherwise. These changes," he said, "must come according to the demands of our conscience and not from mental resolution to form a new life." I'm Jabalani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, we examine the psychology of resolutions and self-improvement with Dr. Bruce Leese, a professor of family medicine at KU. We'll talk about how not to let what you have resolved eventually dissolve into the daily minutiae of everyday life, how to keep promises to yourself, how to take care of yourself as well as other people, how to stick to the small tasks that lead to the big changes. Kansas City, what are your New Year's resolutions and personal improvement goals for 2013? We resolve to discuss self-improvement on Central Standard after this hour's NPR News. Good morning, Kansas City. It was Raekwon the Chef of the rap group Wu-Tang Clan who promised once in a song that there would, in fact, come a year where he was going to buy his girlfriend a tiger. Next year, he said. Well, as of 2013, there's no word on whether this woman did, in fact, receive said tiger. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Today, we discuss the best-laid plans of mice and men, the animal spirit versus the conscious mind, and how resolutions to transform ourselves are different from actual self-improvement. And joining us to discuss these conundrums is Dr. Bruce Leese, a professor of family medicine at KU. Welcome to the show and Happy New Year, Dr.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you, too.
So what is a resolution? Tell us what a resolution is.
From the word resolve, it is a plan or an effort to make a change in one's life. It's a transformation. It's the anticipation of that transformation from one state of mind or behavioral habit to another.
So an idea, in other words, what starts a resolution, like a Senate resolution in the legislative process?
Not sure those are exactly the same, but people walk around knowing what their bad habits are. And when they decide they're going to change those habits, that's when they form resolutions. In general, we know that we should lose weight, we should exercise more, we should read more, we should keep in touch with our parents, our kids, whatever. We know that, and we contemplate changing, but a resolution is when we actually plan and then take action.
And that's where it starts. But how does that differ from putting self-improvement at the forefront? Everybody has ideas.
It's interesting because there's research that compares groups of people. One researcher, John Norcross, 1 year, right before New Year's, randomly they called over 1,000 people and they said, "Are you planning New Year's resolutions or not?" And they put them into those two groups. Some were planning and some weren't. The people who actually decided they would have New Year's resolutions were much, much, much more likely to make changes at the beginning of the year. They didn't all last. But the difference between people who make those who resolve themselves to change and people who just contemplate that they're not doing the right thing are very different groups.
And we'll talk about why they don't last throughout the process of this show. But what is our self-improvement objectives? Where does that stand in terms of having comfort or lack of comfort?
Well, you use use an important term there. You said self-improvement with the word self there. It's interesting. People do plan to change largely because they get a lot of feedback. They get they got bombarded with messages about what they're doing wrong. People who are overweight, people who smoke, people who don't exercise. We get the message that ourselves, who we are, we're not adequate. And that keeps a lot of people in the mindset of, I need to change. Self-improvement is at the top of resolutions. Unfortunately, very few people resolve themselves to change the world to make it a better place. It might be better to actually resolve to do something that enhances the world at large, or family members, or people we love, or our neighbors, our community.
So beyond external stimuli, what is the motivation behind us trying to transform ourselves? Because the external stimuli can be the criticism, or it can be a Ferrari on a commercial
when you're driving a Pinto and you want to change that factor right there?
At the most basic level, the drive to change has to do with perceiving ourselves and our behaviors as essentially good or bad. We don't want to engage in what we judge to be bad behaviors. I don't want to do something that I know I shouldn't do. I want to strive for goodness for me. Everybody has their own standards for what's good for them and what's not good for them. So the question, what drives people to make these resolutions and changes, they don't want to be bad. They don't want to misbehave. They don't want to do what they shouldn't do. In addition, there are other motives like vanity. I want to be thinner so people look at me and say, you know, you look nice. I don't want to smoke because people comment that they smell smoke. Not me literally, but those are driving forces, internal and external. I would want people to also resolve to change, again, because they would like to make the world around them a better place, their community, their families, the people they touch and care about.
The old axiom, be the change that you want to see, in other words.
Yeah, that's what inevitably happens when we make changes that are good for others. We ourselves change, and when we ourselves change for the better, at times the people around us change. I recently had somebody who said, I want to quit doing this bad behavior, but what about my spouse who doesn't want to change? My response was a lot like what you just said. You know, if you are the change that you want for him or her, your spouse, if you make that change, it's likely to influence him or her in a positive manner.
Psychologically, what does the concept of stimulation or arousal have to do with getting us motivated?
We human creatures, we walk around this world. I use the word creatures. We're creatures of habit. We really don't seek excessive amounts of arousal and stimulation. They shake us up, make us anxious, nervous, etc. Us human beings, we strive for optimum or ideal levels of arousal. And arousal comes from novelty. What we do out there in the world creates more or less novelty for ourselves. If you were to start using the opposite, the hand that's not dominant to write, that'd be a lot of arousal. You'd be stimulated in ways that aren't pleasant. If you decided that you would sleep on the couch instead of the bed, that would create arousal. Anything that's novel creates arousal. So we are creatures of habit. We strive to maintain arousal levels that we can stand. And if we're under-aroused or bored, that creates a different kind of stress.
So something like a diamond-encrusted dog collar that you can also use as a phone is something that's arousing and titillating.
That's very
the novelty of it.
That's very novel. Yes. When you miss your exit because you're going someplace you don't usually go to, that's a perfect example of how we are such creatures of habit. If you're driving along the road, if you try taking different ways to work, it's unnerving. Those disrupt our normal way, mode of operating.
And how does this arousal, this titillation, this stimulation, how does it play in the motivations behind resolutions or self-improvement objectives?
Oh, people underestimate how they will changing their habits. If I am used to eating fatty foods that just are comfort foods, if I'm a creature of habit when it comes to comfort foods and I decide I want to lose weight, it's really unnerving to walk into a place that smells so good because, you know, it serves our favorite comfort foods and then to order a salad with no dressing, and no croutons and no cheese. It's unnerving. It's novel to our habit of getting comfort foods, and it ain't going to feel good. And we really won't want to do it after the novelty wears off and it's just uncomfortable.
Certainly. What do we do with our self-improvement objectives when we have to consider the way we handle crises, whether these crises are real or imagined?
There are so many different kinds of crises, what makes a crisis is that we sense danger and we are facing a turning point in our lives. So that danger and turning point, it could be a life-threatening illness. It could be the life-threatening illness of somebody we love. It could be we don't get our flight home to get back to work from traveling. But a crisis forces us out of our comfort zone in that it creates unexpected arousal from which we can emerge either wiser, better, stronger people, or we can really botch it up and find ourselves in deeper trouble in the middle of the crisis.
How do we botch it up?
Temper tantrums, complaining to people that can't fix it. We allow our emotions to get out of hand, and we feel so bad that we're not in a problem-solving mode. So a crisis will inevitably create that fork in the road where we can turn right or wrong.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM KCUR and streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. Our guest is Dr. Bruce Lease, professor of family medicine at KU, and we're trying to figure out the difference between a resolution and a true transformation. Speaking of which, Kansas City, are you fed up with never living up to your resolutions? Do you want to take them further? Let the good Dr. Bruce Lease talk you through it. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also hit us up at email, centralstandard@kcur.org. You can also holler on Facebook. And over on Twitter, we are at KCURCST. Dr. Lease, as we pose this question on resolutions and self-improvement to the audience, and by the way, the number is 816-235-2888 for you to join the conversation. As we pose this question, let's talk about the pervasive problems in our society that we experienced in 2012. They're ongoing, they're works in progress, and they make us want to turn a new leaf. The economy, for instance, career problems. How does this figure?
Well, I'm going to answer that question by addressing something you said a moment ago, which is to distinguish between a resolution and a real or true transformation, were the words you used. And I really like that because when we face the problems of the world to the extent, they more or less affect us directly. Some people just know about employment because of others who are unemployed. Some people know it the hard way, which is they are unemployed. A fork in the road, a crisis, or a decision or resolution to change clearly presents a challenge. So if we look out at the world and we see the troubles out there and we want to make a difference or it's affecting us directly, we have to start problem solving. We have to start thinking, do I want to make a real transformation here? Do I want to be someone different? I've seen a lot of people who are negatively affected by the economy, and they're frightened. They're unhappy. They're truly frightened. They're very afraid of the impact on their potential family and so forth. But to the extent that they say, maybe this will be an opportunity for me to really look at what I've been doing and become somebody maybe a little bit different than I've been, to the extent that they do that, their lives can significantly improve.
And this inevitably leads to financial problems, whether they're real or imagined, whether there are fears around them. I'm going to get my stuff together this year financially. Career and financial problems are connected.
It's really interesting, and I say this at every time I do a show with you. I always read as much as I can in the days before to try to grab whatever I can, wherever I can find it. And I was reading about suicide and what's really tragically unfortunate and interesting is that a lot of suicides follow devastating financial and career-related processes, the loss of a job, the inability to pay the mortgage, and children, tragically, suicide is one of the top reasons for death in adolescence, and oftentimes it involves parents who are frantically worried and perhaps bickering and struggling with each other over finances. They can't pay their bills. They don't know if they should go into foreclosure. They don't know. I mean, there's so much uncertainty that occurs with financial crises at that personal level that it can lead to even suicide.
Okay, Kansas City, we know you have New Year's resolutions. We know you want to get it together this year, quote unquote, air quotes. water quotes, whatever, 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. What do you think the difference between a resolution and a true self-improvement objective is, and why have your resolutions failed or tapered off in the past? Once again, the number is 816-235-2888. You can also write in to Central Standard at KCUR.org. Facebook is also an option. And on Twitter, we're at KCURCST. Career, financial, and of course, you mentioned family problems, which inevitably lead to your sort of social, political crises. Because then you begin to look outward at what the government or what your job or what structural institutions aren't giving you. Talk about that.
Well, just one look at the last couple of months with the so-called fiscal cliff, and now they're talking about another cliff we face. The public is subjected to whatever politicians decide they want to say about the problems in the country and in the world. We are at the mercy of people who tell us what's wrong with the world. It's not always done for the purpose of educating us. To a large extent, there's unnecessary drama that's created by some of the political challenge that our country faces. And there are a lot of people who don't have all the information and just hear we're in desperate straits. And it's not good when we are told we have a problem and we aren't told that there are good potential solutions. And that's the problem with a personal transformation. I may know, you may know that that your blood pressure is up, or you may know that you are overweight, or I may know that I have whatever problem I have, high cholesterol. If I don't know the path to solving it, but not just what the doctor says, how am I going to do it? The doctor says I need to do this, that, and the other thing, but that doesn't tell me how I'm going to do it. And without that path, what should have been a good positive transformation does become a crisis for us. So your question about the state of the union, the state of the world, the state of the country, we're told a lot of things by our leaders, not that we can't trust, but that we just don't always know their motives for telling us that we have an emergency. And we certainly don't know which of the solutions that the various parties argue about are the right solutions. So it leaves us feeling anxious and unresolved ourselves.
And speaking of anxious and unresolved, what about the aspects of life itself that there's no way we'll ever be able to control? Nature, Sandy, Katrina, Hugo, Andrew.
What I always advocate for is kind of a top-down solution to all of these questions. From the top down, I hadn't thought of it this way until this second, but I really mean from our own brains down. I think us humans ought to begin with the question, who do I want to be? How do I want to operate in this world? How am I going to make this world a better place? How am I going to make a difference? I think those questions are the questions we should start with. When we resolve, and there's that word, to transform ourselves to people that care about the world and how we operate in that world, I think that no problem is too big. So if everyone's bombarding me with the problem with the fiscal cliff or the environment, I should decide what I'm going to do about it based on what my core values are about where I belong in this world and how I ought to make some change, how I can potentially make changes.
Rosanna in Fairway, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi.
Hello.
I think it's really hard to make changes at this time of the year, that the calendar is working against us because the days are short and dark and cold, and particularly if you're trying to change diet and exercise, it's just a lot easier to do it when days are longer and warmer and fruits and vegetables are growing. And so I recommend everybody think about starting New Year's resolutions like that in June.
Rosanna, you know
what?
I think you just gave me an idea for a research study. The study I mentioned earlier was a study of people who resolve to change at New Year's versus those that don't resolve to change, I'd be really interested in comparing New Year's resolvers to people who at the beginning of the summer say, I'm going to get in shape now because the summer's here. And you're right. There's a lot. There are terrific opportunities when the sun is shining. You can go out in shorts and a T-shirt. So hadn't thought about that before.
Thank you, Rosanna, for your comments and joining the conversation on self-improvement and resolutions there. Rosanna brings up an interesting point. We're eating essentially from Thanksgiving. We're consuming essentially from Thanksgiving through Christmas. We're drinking like fish on New Year's Eve. And then suddenly on January 1st or January 2nd, I'm going to streamline my finances. And when I just was beyond my means on this big robot that serves pizza. And, you know, I just crashed out and had a hangover from New Year's, but I'm going to drink less and I'm going to get my body all right. She mentions the timing. The timing isn't necessarily right for that, right?
Well, it's interesting because there are many, many contests relating to weight control. Now they're even being advertised on TV. And, you know, the more you weigh or the more misbehaved you are, the more you have to change. And some people will really go out of control and misbehave a whole lot, knowing that it'll be easier to pull back from drinking and eating and smoking and doing all this stuff too much. It's easier to pull back from doing it way, way, way too much than it is from doing it minimally. The only step from minimal is no more. And if you really misbehave a lot over the holidays, backing off that could still bring it to a normal level of misbehavior instead of an extreme level.
What do you think about her supposition to wait until seasonal affective disorder implications of winter have passed?
Well, that's what I meant when I said it'd be an interesting study. I think, and I haven't seen this, I haven't seen any data on this ever, but I bet you more people lose weight in anticipation of putting on bathing suits, and more people lose weight when they can go out and move around outside. I bet a lot more of those people change habits, especially relating to food and diet and exercise than around this time of year when it's still snowy out and cold. So it would be a study worth doing.
Getting back to the change we can't control and how it affects our ability to move forward, what about the death of a loved one? Say in 2012, and we think of the Sandy Hook incident, those people having to move into 2013, where it's never, ever, ever going to be the same again.
I have to take a deep breath as I even think about that because it is so gut-wrenching. The researchers Holmes and Ray, many years ago, 30 maybe years ago, studied the extent to which the things we can't control impact us. They did the famous Holmes and Ray stress scale, I think they called it, something like that. But the death of a spouse is the most impactful. I'm surprised that it's not the death of a child, but it could be that they didn't have a big enough sample to look at that. But faced with that level of pain and suffering and gut-wrenching, sickening, crisis, people do emerge at the other end, still alive and hopefully well. But it's a terrible, terrible ordeal. I didn't say this first because I don't want to sound like I'm minimizing their pain, but a lot of people change for the better when they face that kind of uncontrollable pain and suffering. Certainly, nobody wants to hear, there was a reason for this or he's in a better place. There's even research on that. There is research that shows that those are the most undesirable responses. People who say he's in a better place or God wanted him in heaven. Those are terribly painful for most average people to hear. But many people do emerge even more motivated than ever to make the world a better place. And my heart goes out to anyone who's lost a child or a spouse they love before their time. But best case scenario, we do figure out how to cope and we do decide we're going to help others who've been in pain like that.
Our guest is Dr. Bruce Lease, professor of family medicine at KU. We're trying to figure out the difference between a resolution and a true self-improvement framework and dealing with change in the new year. Kansas City, are you fed up with never living up to your resolutions? What do you want to do to take them further? What has your resolution been this year? How's it going? And what do you think your obstacles are as the year gets underway? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Email centralstandard@kcur.org. You can also hit us up on Facebook. KCURCST is our Twitter handle. Central Standard returns in just a moment. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. We're talking about self-improvement as everyone contemplates the new year, plans, intentions, resolutions, and why they sometimes don't work out. Our guest is Dr. Bruce Lease, professor of family medicine at KU, and we're trying to figure out in this hour the difference between resolution and a true transformation. Kansas City, are you fed up with never living up to your resolutions? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. The email address is centralstandard@kcur.org. You can also hit us up on Facebook and over on Twitter. We're at KCURCST. Before we get to Dr. Lease, we're going to go straight to Nancy in Omaha. Nancy, calling from Omaha. Yes. Omaha, Nebraska?
Well, I'm on the highway, so I'm not too far from St. Joe.
All right. Headed to Omaha. What's your question?
Oh, so you were talking about change, and I was just going to offer my perspective, having gone through a lot of change, that I think it's really a pretty complex process, and so the point that I was going to make is I think things like overeating or drinking or that kind of thing, those are coping mechanisms. Those are how we deal with life. It's unless you can learn to cope with the stresses in life without those behaviors, you'll fall back on them. A lot of people like myself, if you get anxious or bored or fidgety, you might go to the cupboard. And so I think the process of losing weight and keeping it off involves an internal transformation, which is why it's so really hard to do in the same way with drinking, for example. So I think that if you want to go beyond a resolution to a true transformation, it involves a lot of internal work. And because there's a whole science of change, you can tap into that, and you can learn what science has told us about change, and then you can use that to your benefit. And, for example, one of the things is you keep your goals very, very small, very achievable within not a lot of time frame, and then you set deadlines for yourself. So my goal for this year, my resolution for this year is financial maturity. I sat down this morning and looked at some things, and my only goal right now is to be in bed by 9 o'clock tonight so that tomorrow morning I'm up early enough to spend time on it, because the biggest obstacle I figured out right now for me is I don't think I have the time. So I don't know if that makes any sense at all, but I really do think that people can change, they can transform their lives, but it does involve kind of outsmarting your natural instincts and your learned behaviors. You really do. Anyway, that's been my experience. I've been at a lot from help from other people. I rely on other people for help. I think it takes a village for a person to lose weight or sober up or whatever your issue might be. So, I don't know. I think there's a lot of hope out there for people, and I think it's just understanding what you're up against and leveraging the tools that are really available to you to get you there.
Thank you, Nancy, for a very articulate and passionate contribution to this conversation today on Central Standard about self-improvement and New Year's resolutions. And Nancy brings up an interesting point. Dr. Lease, what conversation should people be having with themselves as they think about starting fresh? We're focused on external stimulation, looking better, having more money, and usually for the approval of others. But what's the internal dialogue?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, my preference is that people start with the top down. They ask themselves, who am I and who do I want to be and how do I want to relate to the world, and how will I know if I'm accomplishing these things? Nancy made so many very good and valid remarks. I would love to just very quickly review those. Change is a complex process. That is right. These behaviors that are habits are, she called them coping mechanisms. She is right. I like the term compensatory strategies because we use them to compensate for skills that we don't necessarily have. A lot of them are self-control skills. She said we should look at the science, what science tells us about change, and she mentioned that keep the goal small and doable, and that's exactly right. It may not be wise to just say, I'm going to lose 25 pounds this year. It may be much wiser to say, I will no longer eat outside of designated meal and snack times that I designate, and I will no longer eat rich desserts. I will no longer. So those are doable goals. And she said we should relate to other people what we're trying to do, and support from others for making real doable changes is really vital and helpful. That's why it's so hard for people who live alone to take as good a care of themselves as they could if they had people to share that with. So, oh, and the other thing she said was outsmart our instincts. That's right. Our habits are durable. They last so that we can function in society and in the world, and we know how to start our car each day when we get in it. Those are important habits, but we have to outsmart the bad habits, as she said. So very good, insightful comments. Appreciate those.
Outsmarting our nature.
Yeah, our instincts, our nature, all of that. It's natural to eat comfort foods, and we have to go outside of that instinct to eat those natural sweet foods.
And it's natural to want to calm down when you can't calm down and find anything, even pharmaceutical, drugs, alcohol, have a smoke outside, that type of stuff.
Well, that brings up a couple of important points. We are conditioning is when we pair up a new behavior with an old behavior. And if we associate eating rich foods with getting calmed down for a moment or smoking a cigarette with calmed down, we're becoming conditioned to use the compensatory strategy, the habit. We've become conditioned to do the wrong thing to deal with the discomfort. People who are severely overweight, have been found over and over again to misread the cues they feel internally as hunger. They think they're hungry when, in fact, there is no physiologic correlate. Nothing correlates with in your body with hunger. You've eaten recently. Your blood sugar level's normal. There's nothing that should make you hungry. But if you have a problem with overeating, you tell yourself, I am hungry now, when you may not be hungry now.
Drink some water, people. Ron and Olathe, welcome to Central Standard. Ron and Olathe, are you there? Ron is not there. We're going to go to Stacy, who is also in Olathe.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
Hi. Yes. You know, I just caught the last end of what Nancy had said, and it's similar to what I had told the screener. I'm a yoga instructor, and one of the things that especially now at the beginning of the year that I've started to do is oftentimes in yoga, we set an intention at the beginning of our practice. So it's like a little baby resolution. And so even in my own life here at the beginning of the year, I've started to think, well, what is my intention for the year? Whereas in an hour-long yoga practice, it might be my intention to work on my flexibility or work on my strength. But I think, okay, if I have an intention for the year to try to take the small steps, I totally agree with what Nancy was saying. So rather than, oh, I'm just going to be nice to people, like this general thing, to think, okay, well, what does that mean? I need to be nice to, or how does that look? The small steps of it, like to speak kindly or to stop myself from talking, rather than going with that first thing that comes out of my mouth, which may not be nice, to make slow myself down, to give thought to what I'm doing. And so it's interesting coming from the yoga background, which even listening to you talk, I'm like, I could go on for hours about this notion of listening to what's going on in my body and paying attention to it with intentionality rather than just flying off the handle. But the thing I was going to contribute was to break down the goals into smaller steps and to sort of set intentions rather than getting overwhelmed by some huge resolution. So,
thank you very much, Stacy, for that. And she brings up an interesting point. What are intentions versus plans? They're two different words for a reason, Dr. Lise.
Intentions are more abstract. It's what I'd like to do, and they're important. They might precede specific plans. In learning yoga, Those who learn yoga can start with the intentions because the method, the practice of yoga provides the plan. So you start with your intention, and then your yoga instructor takes you through the planned activities that will serve you well. I want to put in a plug here for KCUR and for public radio. You know, when I was first invited to do this, I thought, wow, a psychologist on the radio, I hope it's not – I hope I don't find myself in, you know, in the position a lot of my colleagues have in doing radio psychology. But the quality of calls that we get, Nancy and Stacy bring up such good points, and I love hearing from people who call in who really have discovered these things, because then it's not just some hoity-toity psychologist telling people what to do. It's people who have succeeded in doing what we talk about here, and it's really refreshing, and it's not surprising because it's public radio.
Well, Dr. Lees, we don't do pop psychology here because Central Standard don't go pop.
Well, it's great to hear people talk about what they've done that makes so much sense and that I hope inspires other people who are listening.
How do regrets play into moving forward? Should we be examining what didn't work out in order to figure out what will?
Oh, you bring up such an exciting topic. It's called relapse prevention. People who set out to make changes in their lives, let's say I want to start a yoga program and I plan to go 3 times a week, the day I don't go to yoga for my third day is my relapse day. I'm starting to relapse. Preventing relapse is all about learning from that relapse. So if I let's pick a Jabalani, would you like me to talk about smoking, exercise here, or dieting? I'll pick one of those and I'll talk about relapse prevention real quick and answer your question.
How about dieting on a treadmill while having a parliament?
No.
You can mix it together.
No, not going there. But
would you like to mix it together?
When people, you said, what about learning from mistakes? It's important for people to make mistakes during the process of transforming oneself, particularly because it points to our own vulnerabilities. If I were a drinker who shouldn't be drinking and I decide I'm not going to drink anymore, and then in 6 weeks I find myself I've gotten drunk, it's important for me to take apart what happened that night I got drunk and say, now I understand what drove me to drink, one of the things that drove me to drink in the first place. So mistakes, trip-ups, falls, whatever you want to call them, relapses, lapses, those things that happen from here on out in those people who try to transform themselves provide valuable information about why they do what they do and how they get into trouble. So that's what relapse prevention is all about.
Charles is in Kansas City, Missouri. Welcome to Central Standard, Charles.
Hi, how you doing? I hear your radio show, well, maybe 5 times a week sometimes if I'm lucky.
All right, you hear me 4 times a week, but go ahead.
Trying to get out of a parking space. You won't believe these people. This is terrible. I guess I'm going to leave or stay right here in this parking space. But, hey, listen, I called because I'm going to be 64, and I'm looking for some change in my life.
All right.
And I don't know, you know, if I didn't tell you I was 64, I don't know if you could tell from the sound of my voice. But sometimes you can listen to a person, you know, the way they sound, and do they sound old or do they sound young or whatever. But, hey, that's not the real reason I called, is because every time I see that commercial, you know, help, I've fallen and I can't get up, I don't feel that way as a older person. But, you know, there are some things I want to do. I want to learn how to save some money, not a whole lot of money, but I also want to be better physically and I want to be better mentally. And those are the changes that I'm looking for. And that's it. I just want my life to turn around and be a little bit better.
All right. That's enough. Thank you, Charles. He just wants his life to be a little bit better.
Those are big things. So, and it's nice to hear that regardless of where people are on the age continuum, that people do feel driven to improve their lives.
And that's an important point that we need to make here for all of our listeners of all ages or all of our listeners in different generations. A lot of people have convinced themselves that it's too late to change.
Right.
Talk about that.
Well, it isn't. Clearly, it's not. It's never too late to find greater meaning in life and to reach out to others. If one is short-sighted in choosing their goals, if somebody at my age in my 50s is looking to get abs of steel so that chicks will dig me, you know, then I'm really on the wrong track. There are age-appropriate goals and aspirations for all of us.
So you don't do abs of steel?
I am hardly an abs of steel kind of guy. I wish I had the free time to do what I did when I was that age. But, you know, ideally what we do is what we keep up with where we're supposed to be in the lifespan development. Ideally, we keep up with it. We are on top of it so it doesn't crush us. For example, we watch our weight so we don't become diabetic in our 60s or 50s. So I guess the message I'd want to leave here is look at your age and say, what do healthy people do at my age to further their own personal growth and so that they're people who make a good difference in this world? And one doesn't have to look too far to find that. I bet you could find that on Google, age-appropriate good behaviors.
We're live on Central Standard 89.3 FM on your dial, KCUR. We're streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Our guest is Dr. Bruce Lees, professor of family medicine at KU, and we're still trying to figure out the difference between a resolution and a true transformation, as we've been talking about that throughout the hour. Kansas City, are you fed up with never living up to your resolutions? Would you like to take them further in 2013? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. The email is centralstandard@kcur.org. Twitter, KCURCST. Should we reach out to friends and family members that will support our goals, keep us accountable, and not be codependent?
People vary to both extremes. There are people who try to keep it a big secret and hope that people notice that they are losing weight or that they haven't smoked. And then there are people at the other end of the continuum who drive people crazy by constantly talking about, you know, I want a cigarette, I've quit, I really want a cigarette, boy, I wish I had a cigarette, oh, I can't eat that, I'm on a diet, I can't eat. So there's an optimum level of support that we do need to ask for, and it's not predefined. That optimum or ideal level is not one that I can give you. It's one that you need to decide upon. One of the reasons why people do so well in structured groups like 12-step programs and weight loss programs is because that's an environment where you ask for the support and that's where you talk for the whole time about the habit you're trying to change. So,
and you're held accountable.
And you're held accountable, exactly. The difficulty, I was going to say to Charles earlier, and I can say it now, at 64 years old or 24 years old, a good thing to do is to turn to peers and say, can you tell me the truth? Tell me what you would have me work on because you care about me. So ideally, we turn to people who love us, care about us, and want to see good, and we ask them, how would you like to see me change? I might even go home and ask my wife tonight.
Our earlier caller, Dr. Lees, Charles, was looking for support. Are there support services or support groups for seniors that you know of in the area?
Be careful about calling a 64-year-old old guy a senior. No, you're correct in saying seniors. But, boy, we're living now into our 80s. And so I don't know that I would seek age-specific. I would want to, at my age or at 64 or 94, I'd want to be in a group that's more heterogeneous where there's the full spectrum of people of various ages. One of the resources that very few people know about is called Meetup. I think it's called meetup.com. You can find groups that will share just about anything with you, whether it's technology or trying to control this or that. It's a pretty cool strategy.
And mea culpa for the age reference thing. Associated Press, actually the style for Associated Press is older Americans, to sort of round that out. So older Americans. Charles called in and wanted some help getting his resolutions on deck. Andy is in KCK. Welcome to Central Standard.
My question is about spirituality, meditation. How does that affect you in reference to transformation?
That's a good question, Andy. Dr. Lee, take it away.
And we have done a show on that, and it was really fun. Us humans, I'll give you the capsule summary of the whole show we did last year. Us humans tend to function more by habit than anything else. We get up in the morning and we know our routine and we function by habit. And to the extent that we don't leave our habits and we stay in our old habits, we keep gaining weight. We keep getting out of shape. We keep smoking. We keep cursing, whatever it is that we think we want to change. Mindfulness is necessary for making these changes. Being attentive beyond just our habits, but being attentive again to who am I, who do I want to be, as I face this menu of foods in this restaurant. Mindfulness is saying, what would be the result, the consequence, the meaning of eating, a gigantic plate of pork chops, buttered mashed potatoes, and beans and served in oil. Looking at that mindfully.
Fried cheese, cheeseburgers.
Oh, the fried cheese puffs that you can get before the meal. If you're mindful instead of mindless or a creature of habit, you will think carefully before making those choices. Meditation is a device. It's a strategy for learning mindfulness. And what's interesting is that some people attribute mindfulness techniques, habits, meditation, all that stuff. A lot of people attribute that to Eastern religion. And one thing we haven't talked about yet is that Eastern religions, some claim that there's a lot of suffering in life that comes from attachment to our habits.
Right, want.
And to the extent that we want things that we shouldn't want, like comfort all the time.
Or just wanting, period.
Yes, wanting attachment, same thing actually, attaching to things that we want. That can be part of that vicious cycle of having bad habits that we can't break. So to the extent that you can become mindful when you're trying to change your behavior, when you think you want a cigarette, take a deep breath and say, oh, what do I really want here? Is it smoke in my lungs? Well, yeah, it might be, but what else do I want? Well, I want to calm down. I want to feel at peace. I don't want to feel anxious. I don't want to feel dependent on nicotine. So I'm grateful to Andy for bringing up mindfulness and meditation. Again, the roots of that are all about breaking habits and breaking attachments and breaking those wants.
What role does time management and structure play in carrying out these goals, these resolutions, or these intentions? Because a lot of people said, I wanted to stick to it. I wanted to work out. I wanted to do X, Y, Z. I didn't have the time. Biggest excuse.
Well, I'm writing the list down. Time management, what were the other things you mentioned?
And structure,
right. Okay, that's right. Thank you. Time management and structure, I would argue, is a common sense way of saying I want to be more mindful. Because time management is all about making minutes count, making seconds count. And we don't go through life making minutes and seconds count. And if we engage in the same old behaviors that we've always done and there are habits associated with those, we need new structures. To answer the question directly, time management and structure, we need new structures for starting new, better, cleaner, healthier habits.
And speaking of habits, you've always said in past shows, Dr. Lease, that it takes 6 months to form a new habit.
And that's, again, based on research, the stages of change model or the trans-theoretical model proposed by, and I say these names and stuff for people who want to do further research, trans-theoretical model devised by Norcross and his colleagues, that model has defined the stages of change. And we understand that mindlessness is pre-contemplation. Contemplation is when you're starting to say, maybe I have a problem. But to get to the 6 months, that's the maintenance stage of change. So those of you who set out to lose weight, exercise, and do other good things, quit smoking, quit whatever it is you want to change, if in July you're still doing it, there's a very good chance that you have made a permanent change in your life. And that's where that 6 months comes from.
Let's go to Julianne in Liberty. Julianne, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, Hi, thanks for having me. I was calling because everything that everybody's saying is such great information, but I think a lot of times people have a hard time finding that information as far as finding the right fit for a counselor or just being able to admit that, hey, I've got some issues and maybe I don't have the skills to handle it. And by skills, what I mean is, you know, communication skills. You know, if you grew up in a tumultuous, argumentative, maybe even abusive family, you're not going to have those skills even as an adult. And, you know, you talked about looking at the past, and that can be quite painful. But what I found is if you look to the past, you can learn a lot from it. And I did this through DBT, which is dialectical behavioral therapy based in cognitive behavioral therapy. You had a couple of callers talking about the science of psychology, and I believe that there's a lot of information mined and so useful in DBT. And in fact, I was misdiagnosed. I have narcolepsy, and I was misdiagnosed for several years, 21 years. And so I went through a lot of counseling trying to figure out why I was quick to anger, quick to sadness and that sort of thing, not realizing I was just sleep deprived. But once I got treatment and I was able to look back, I thought, I'm so glad that I went through these programs because, you know, it helped me with rumination. It helped me with judging myself and judging others. There's just so many skills that I learned from going through that.
Excellent. And that's a well-tested model, Marshall Linehan's DBT.
What are your resolutions that you'd like to share as we wrap up here, Dr. Lease?
Well, I have gotten back into writing. And so I am...
Therapeutic, man. It's therapeutic.
And I'm working on a chapter and revising a book we did 20 years ago that did really well. And so my resolution is to bring that back into my life. And it's going well, but it's a challenge.
And when you do bring that back into your life, you'll discuss it on this show.
I always enjoy it.
You can hear Dr. Lease's shows on anger, mindfulness, character, love, and all the big questions, as well as other programs, archived broadcasts, and special features at KCUR.org. Tune in tomorrow as we explore the mystery of hypnotism and talk to a local artist and personality who attacks the problem of invasive species by putting them on a menu. Our show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton. Up to Date is next with a look at how genetic research is changing the way we detect and treat diseases. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.